This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk, commemorating the life of Maestro Michael Morgan, who died at the age of 63 on August 20th, 2021. Sports fans will remember him conducting the Oakland Symphony at the final Warriors game in Oakland before they moved to San Francisco, and for the Ice Capades. He conducted the Oakland Symphony for 30 years and was a guest conductor with top orchestras of St. Louis, Chicago, Los Angeles, Baltimore, New York, and San Francisco. I would like to share a conversation I had with Michael in 2020 during the pandemic.
How would you place yourself on the scale of self-criticism versus confidence?
Yeah, I don't know any musician of any merit who isn't constantly trying to improve. Most of us are. If we listen to things we've done or listen to previous performances, we're always with an ear towards what could be done better the next time, and generally not being completely satisfied with anything. And so that's extremely common. Anything else would be very much the exception in that case. If someone actually thought that they had done all they needed to do to a given piece of music, I can't even imagine it.
Your role as often involves education and working with the youth.
Well, when I came here 30 years ago, there was not a lot of music in the Oakland Public Schools, but I knew that if we wanted to have a pipeline into our youth orchestra, if we wanted to have a future audience, if we just wanted to play a more important role in the life of the city, we needed to be involved with the next generations. And also, I started myself in public schools in Washington, D.C., and so I knew that in order for anyone to really have a chance to get into this field, it has to be available to them at a very early age. So I started going around schools on my own, and then we basically lobbied for the return of more music to the Oakland Public Schools. Oakland Public Schools are doing quite well right now in terms of having maintained their music programs. This year, everything's up in the air because you can't gather. And so how can you have your ensembles, and whether it's performing arts or visual arts, or whether it's music or play or whatever it is, keep an eye out and make sure that in a year like this, it's not you don't go with a completely lost year. I mean, some people might think, well, what difference does it make if you lose a year? You get back on track next year. Well, the kids don't have this option. They are growing up now. They don't have a year to put on pause until the adult world gets its act together. So you have to keep advocating for them now, because now is the time that they need it. They don't need it years from now or when it's convenient for everyone else. They're growing up at the moment.
Oh, thank you for that, Christopher Cross. Remember him? Had the other big hit. Arthur, he does as he please. Dudley Moore, Sir Laurence Olivier. All right. When we hear that music on a Tuesday, 9:40, that's time to get out on San Francisco Bay and all the seven seas. I think there's more than seven. But around the world, wherever there's water and watercraft, we have SailSportTalk.com. And joining us, as always, co-hosting this segment with me, from SailSportTalk.com is Karen Lyle. Karen up in the Pacific Northwest right now. How you doing, Karen?
Great. Did I hear correctly that you were up in Seattle just recently?
I was in Boise.
Ah, no, that's not the same.
I was pleasantly surprised at what a fun, new, clean, awesome, diverse place Boise, Idaho actually is.
Yeah, actually, I was just there a couple months ago, and I had something called caramelized bacon that was just amazing. I thought, wow, it was really cool.
Nothing wrong with that. All right, let's bring in our guests right now, and that is Captain Catherine Pogue, here to talk about the Lady Washington, which we talked about a couple years ago on the show, and Tall Ship, and we talked about her cannon battle with the Hawaiian chieftain off Pier 39. Captain Poe, welcome back to the show. How many souls were lost in Davy Jones' locker during that cannon battle?
Well, not too many, actually. We don't fire projectiles out of the cannons. The Coast Guard kind of frowns on that.
Catherine, it's really great to talk to you. And you are a brand new captain. So you've come up to the ranks. You came in as a captain's training, and now you're at the helm. How has that experience for you?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, I applied for the chief mate position for this season and said I was interested in doing more relief captain work. And it just so happened that our captain that was on when I got here had to go take a class at this time. So I'm filling in for her. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
The Lady Washington, when I think about, the original sloop of war and all the great, the original and the Revolutionary War, this is about, I think, about as cool as it gets when you talk about the tall ships. And just, could you just break it down for me? How many sails do you actually have when you go full sail?
Well, it varies. We have 12 sails that we can set, and we mostly don't do that. We do it for photo shoots and stuff like that. But when we have the public on board, we actually have a required minimum number of sails that is not quite as many as we can set. But the Coast Guard likes us to keep a certain number. So we usually set around 6 or 7 when we have the public on board.
Captain Catherine, tell me about when you are sailing up here in Washington. I happen to be in Seattle at the moment. And come on my way over to Aberdeen. Where are you sailing out of during the pandemic?
So right now we're actually traveling all over the Sound. We've been pretty much in the Sound since May, and we've been to Everett. We've been to the Wooden Boat Center in Seattle. We've been, right now we're in Bellingham. And we're about to go to Friday Harbor. So we're all over the place. We'll also be in Olympia and Port Townsend for the remainder of this season. So we travel all over the Sound. Last year when the pandemic really hit, we were in Port Orchard for a few months. And they were really, really kind to us. They let us stay there for 3 months and only charged us for electricity.
It's such a majestic looking ship. And Hollywood, of course, has taken notice. Pirates of the Caribbean, the Blackbeard series, Star Trek. What's it like when, the likes of Spielberg take over the old boat?
It's really fun. It's so interesting to see the filming process from the side of when it's being filmed rather than watching a movie. It's definitely a lot slower than it appears on camera. It takes a lot of time and effort for just a few short minutes of film to come out. But it's really fascinating. Really interesting, and it's fun to just sail the boat and see people in historical costume and kind of pretend that you're back in time.
What has been your experience sailing, and what got you involved?
I started sailing on tall ships like this in San Diego when I was 16 in high school, and kept doing it through high school and college as a summer job, and fell in love with it, didn't really want to work at a desk like college was telling me I should do, so I just kept on working on boats, discovered the liveaboard tall ship industry, and have been doing it ever since. I was on the Lady Washington as chief mate 5 years ago. I've been on ships all over the country, mostly in the Great Lakes and the West Coast, and yeah, I really love it. So I'm back here on the Lady for this season and through the winter.
Couple more questions for our Captain Catherine Pogue. Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle with you here on SailSportTalk.com. I know this ship in its current incarnation was built in the 80s. So do you cheat and have a little inboard motor just in case, or is it all sails all the time?
We do have an auxiliary engine. We have a 312 horsepower engine that helps us get from port to port. We are a 18th century ship with 21st century scheduling, so we do have to try to make it to ports on time, and unfortunately the wind is hardly ever in your favor for those. So we do use the engine to travel from port to port, but we definitely try to sail as much as we possibly can, and on our two-hour day sails with the public, we only use the engine to get on and off the dock. Otherwise we're sailing the whole time.
I might mention that when the Lady Washington was last here in San Francisco, April of 2019, she had a cannon battle with the Hawaiian Chieftain, which at that time belonged to Grays Harbor Historical Seaport as well. And I understand that you've recently sold the Hawaiian Chieftain, and it's going to Hawaii.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the Hawaiian Chieftain, on her last haul out, had a lot of just steel degrades over time, and she was at a point where we weren't able to afford the repairs that she needed to keep her sailing. So we've found a family that has the money to finish those repairs. She's actually in Port Townsend now getting those repairs done, and they plan on taking her to Hawaii, her home, and sailing her out of there, which is a pretty cool life for her.
Can you tell us a little bit about a two-masted ship as a brigantine, with one shorter than the other? Because when I hear brig, I think of the jail on the ship.
Yeah, so there are different words for different styles of rigging on ships. So we are termed a brig, which means we have two masts, and a main mast and a foremast, as the main mast is taller than the fore. And doesn't really, I don't think it relates to the jail in any way, but yeah, that's just what it's been called. And a brigantine is actually a slightly different rig, with only fore and aft sails on the main mast, whereas a brig has square sails on both masts. So it's just weird little slight variances that we decide need different names.
Well, I have sailed aboard the Lady Washington several times with several captains, and one of the things for those who are our listeners is that a tall ship has different types of lines, and lines being the ropes that are the working ropes on the boat. And you don't use gloves on the lines that you have, like somebody on a yacht would use, because those lines are different, and sometimes the gloves can catch your hands, so you have to use just your bare hands on the lines. How do you feel about rope and lines and knots and all the fun things that there are to do with them?
It's part of just what makes this industry as a whole more exciting and interesting. It's like a whole new science behind it. We're an entire vessel made up of simple machines, so lots of pulleys, lots of levers, lots of things like that. So having all the lines and the rigging, it looks really complex, and people always step on board and go, oh my God, how can you keep them all apart? How can you tell the difference between what they do? But, I mean, even regular sailors, you have a few lines that you want to know to haul your sails up, and we have the exact same ones. We have halyards and we have sheets, and it's all a pattern, and everything pretty much, it repeats by mast and it repeats by side. Most of the time it's symmetrical. So once you get a handle for what the sails need to do and what the pattern is, it's really quite simple to understand it all. And it's part of what makes it so fun is learning all the lines and the knots and everything you need to do to put the ship together.
And then the history of this ship, going back to the namesake, as I said, in the 1700s, how much do you try to keep that history alive and educate everyone to be in the first American ship to go around Cape Horn, the first American ship to land in Oregon, the first American ship to circumnavigate Vancouver Island, all the cool things that it got to do?
Yeah, so this year is a little different, and last year was a little different. We haven't had our education programming. Normally we're very education-based and take school kids out on field trips during the week, and we do a whole bunch of history stations. We teach them about the life of a sailor and navigation and trade routes. This year we haven't been able to do that because of COVID, but we have the public out for day sails on weekends, and we always include a little history talk about the Lady Washington during that time so that they can get the full experience and really appreciate what it is to be on a boat like this.
I remember after Captain Johann Steinke there was another captain, and I just can't recall his name. I don't know if you were back with the Lady Washington back then, but he could throw a line around one of the posts and tie it, you know, from a distance. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know Johann. He was actually my first captain on the Lady, yeah.
Okay, so you knew Megan and Johann.
Yeah, definitely.
So Megan was the first one who the first mate at the time, and they got married and are now living in the East Coast. And, you know, what is your experience? You know, actually the tiller on that boat is really long, and
yeah,
it takes a bit of maneuvering to get from the rudder from one side to the other. How do you handle that? What's your approach?
Well, it's kind of nice having a tiller. You always know your rudder angle. So many people come on board and are shocked that we don't have a wheel, but the tiller works just fine and is authentic for the period and the size of vessel. It has a tackle system on it. So like I said before, we're made up of simple machines. So the tiller itself is a lever, and then we add a block and tackle purchase on that as well. So we actually have a lot of mechanical advantage on that, as big as the rudder is. And you can pretty easily just haul on the tackle and move it from side to side. I've been able to dock the boat in some pretty tight spaces with just me on the helm.
There she is, Captain Catherine Pogue of the Lady Washington, owned by the Grays Harbor Historical Seaport. Captain, thank you so much for coming on the show, and let's catch up soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Karen, what are you doing up there? You're going around the Puget Sound?
Well, actually, I'm meeting with the Grays Harbor Historical Seaport, and we're working on a couple of projects. You remember Nick Nurse, right?
Of course, yes, head coach of the Toronto Raptors.
That's right. Anyway, so we finally were able to get him a piano that Thelonious Monk had played on in 1942 to 52 in New York, and it was a long and kind of exciting, dramatic journey for that. And it just so happens that Grays Harbor Historical Seaport is partnering with us on a hands preserving history project, and he's going to be restoring the piano through them. I believe it, tall ships and pianos. Can you see how those kind of go together with all the wood and the restoration? And so Kendall Bean and Piano Finders are going to be restoring the piano, but it's going to Grays Harbor.
Very cool. And then when we catch up next week, I would like you to find me a harpsichord played by Franz Liszt. Can you do that?
You know, it's possible.
All right, we'll,
anything, Rick.
We'll give it a shot. Thanks, Karen. See you next week.
Okay.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Bye-bye. Come on back.